Welcome to Deep in the Heart of Frisco podcast with your host, Ed Mahoney and Brian Brickman.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for joining the next episode of Deep in the Heart of Frisco with your co-host, Ed Mahoney and
Brian Brickman.
And today we have another elusive episode of Coffee with the Candidates.
That's right. We have a very special guest.
You want to announce her? Or do you? Because I always
go ahead. Well, right. You always announce. It's Karen Cunningham. Who doesn't know Karen? Everybody know Karen?
I was trying to get the applause thing.
Oh, did you get it?
Yeah, we have some new equipment, everybody. So say hi, Karen.
Say hi, Karen.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Welcome to this crazy, I don't know what to call this thing.
Okay. First of all, just to preface this interview is going to be very lighthearted and get to know you. We don't want to hear about, I mean, you can if you want, but campaigns, we're not going to ask your three-point plan to be on the city. We're not going to ask you that. This is just to get to know you. The politics in Frisco have gotten a little crazy. I don't know if you saw the Frisco ISD board meeting on Monday night. Things are a little crazy. So we want to bring politics in Frisco back to that friendly, small-town mentality. We're just trying to get to know you.
The softer side of politics.
Yes, please.
Okay. Yes. Don't you want that? I mean, isn't that what we all want? Well,
your race is pretty calm compared to some other ones that are out there right now. But we're excited to get to know you and let everybody else know the side of you. So honestly, I haven't prepped a lot of big questions on this one. But the first thing we like to ask is just tell us a little bit about yourself, your family, and all that stuff.
All right. Happy to. So my husband, Craig, and I moved to Frisco 17 years ago. And we have two kiddos. We've got Avery, who's a freshman at Lone Star High School, and Kyle, who is a seventh grader at Trent Middle School. Oh. And about 5 months after we got here, I was sitting at a bunco table with neighbors in my neighborhood, and they told me about this organization called Frisco Women's League. And I decided to join. And what was funny about that is I'd also just found out I was pregnant. Oh. And somehow I thought that was a good idea to do both. So there I started with getting involved in Frisco, and it's been a crazy journey ever since. But I've loved really every minute of being here and living here in Frisco.
So you got right into Frisco Women's League. So many people live here for so long, and they're like, oh, I never even heard of it. My wife's in Frisco Women's League, you know. All the females that I know and I'm friends with are in Frisco Women's League. So it's like, that's cool you got in right away. I like that. That's cool.
I recruit friends every single year to join me.
Yes, you should.
Yeah, and I can attest to that because they're after my wife now.
They should be.
It's a fun group. I mean, it's service and leadership and community. All in one, and it's just a great group of women and doing good things in the community. It's how I've learned about a lot of different nonprofits in the organization, actually how I got involved with other nonprofits in the community over the years as well. So, just part of the journey that and just being able to get involved and serve in the community and get to know our neighbors and fun festive group.
So what brought you to Frisco to begin with?
Yeah, what was it?
Well, we were looking at a new home, a home that we could start a family in. We lived in McKinney at the time. My husband owned a house in McKinney when we got married. We were looking around, and honestly, our realtor was just in love with Frisco. And for a
smart realtor.
Right. For a fairly younger couple. I'm not sure how young we were. But 17 years ago, I was younger than I am now.
Me
so
too.
There you go. But we looked around a lot of different areas, but our realtor just kept showing us houses in Frisco and just felt like this was going to be a great area for us. And we believed him, and we bought a home up in Greyhawk, and we still live up there. And
that's awesome.
Yeah. It's been the best decision we could have ever made. This is home.
Yeah. That's funny because before I lived in Frisco, I actually sold a lot of houses in Frisco. I was like, got to move to Frisco. I'm moving to Frisco. And it's just a great area. Everybody all knew it was going to be a great area.
It still is. It's one of those evolutions that, you know, the dynamics of Frisco has changed over the years. But I think it's still one of the best places to live in our country and to serve on council. Ooh, Karen,
if it had a beach, it'd be better.
What? A beach?
A beach.
Well, we got one right down the street, but that's for another topic. Let's talk about that, next time.
So where are you from originally?
So I'm from Natchitoches, Louisiana. Not Nacogdoches, Texas, but Natchitoches, Louisiana.
Natchitoches.
That's right. I actually knew that. I have family.
A lot of people think it's the same town.
They do.
So anyway, yeah, it's Natchitoches, Louisiana. And we're the oldest settlement in Louisiana Purchase. Right. We were founded in 1714. So very, very old town, very historic, very vibrant downtown area, which is something I've always been very passionate about, because I know what it's brought to Natchitoches over the years. And so it's something I've dreamed of for here in Frisco. And I'm thrilled to see what's happening in downtown Frisco. And I know what it can be. And I'm just thrilled about it. But I was born and raised in Natchitoches. Oh, cool. Went to college in Natchitoches at Northwestern State University. Literally drove across the bridge to go to college. That's where I... And my two sisters still live near that area. One is in Natchitoches and one's in Shreveport, an hour away. My mom still lives in Natchitoches as well.
Oh, that's cool.
That's about my extent of Shreveport. It's about all I know.
Shreveport.
We're going to hit NOLA this year, but I think I've been there once before. I've been once. In fact, there's a funny Facebook video of me out there right now dancing. Oh, really? And it was interesting. So.
That's what NOLA does to you.
NOLA does that to you. So.
I quit going about 10 years ago. I'm too old for Mardi Gras. Last time I was there, I was just, I'm done. I can't do it anymore. There's too many people. But I used to go every year.
It's a fun environment, really fun environment.
Well, and I'm actually going back in October. What's the big festival they do in October? It's the zombie. They have a 5K zombie run, and then they have another thing.
They've got festivals and celebrations.
You can't keep up with NOLA. That whole place is a party town.
It's a party town.
Jazz Fest, which I'm sure probably isn't happening again this year, is I think in May every year in New Orleans, and it's quite the celebration. Crawfish festivals go on in I think it's May or June as well. I mean, it's been a while since I've been gone back for the festivals. But
do you like crawfish?
Oh, I love crawfish. Mm. Absolutely.
It's about that season.
Yeah, and I was going to mention there's a food truck actually that comes around here in Frisco that has Natchitoches meat pies.
What? Really?
So it's kind of like an empanada, but it's spicy beef and seasoning inside. It's really good.
Need them for the Frisco Streets May 8th food truck festival. I'm going to get that contact.
Well, and it's not, unfortunately, I don't know whose truck it is, because it's not a Natchitoches meat pies truck. It's just one of the items they have on it.
Gotcha.
But I think I saw them one year, a couple of years ago, maybe it was at the Frisco Rotary, the Noon Rotary. Mm-hmm. What's that called? Their market,
the farmer's market.
Sorry. But they were at the farmer's market one year. Oh. And I looked up and I went, Natchitoches meat pies. Look at that.
Nice. I'm going to get that.
We got to figure this one out, because I want to try them.
They're delicious.
I now have a mission.
Spicy. If they're done right. And if you want to go to a restaurant for that, there's some Cajun restaurants here in Frisco that serve them as well.
Like Mudbugs?
Mudbugs does serve Natchitoches meat pies.
Man, I tell you what, Mudbugs is the bomb.
Well, and he's from the area, actually. The owner, one of his first cousins, owns a restaurant in Natchitoches, and I've known his family for years. Wow. Yes.
Yeah. Small world.
It is a very small world.
So staying on that topic, what's your favorite restaurant around Frisco?
Napoli's. Eddie Napoli's.
Yes. Okay. That's a good call.
Main and Teal.
There's nothing wrong with Eddie Napoli's.
I love Eddie Napoli's. We've been going since they opened, and we are, I dare say, regulars. Nice. Saturday night has Big Daddy, and Big Daddy sings a lot of different songs. He actually sings a little bit more country, so it's not necessarily Italian music. And it's always fun whenever you look around the room and you figure out that there are new people in the restaurant when Sweet Caroline starts, and he'll start singing, people will start raising their hands and waving, and then when it gets to the chorus, the entire restaurant breaks out in song.
Wow, really?
Let's do it.
It's awesome. It's
I've never seen that.
And many people will just sit, they'll stop eating, they'll look around, they'll think, what restaurant are we in?
What is going on? What is this?
Some take out their Caroline.
Come on, let's do it. The three of us break.
What are we
going to
do?
Let's go. Right, three, two, one. Sweet Caroline. Good times never seem so good. So good. So good. So good. Okay, I'm done. That's about as much as I got.
All right. So I can't sing that song because I've been a ticket listener for so long, and they have Sweet Hardline. So I have the Sweet Hardline lyric stuck in my head whenever,
Is that a parody of the original?
Hammer and Rise.
Oh, God.
Doot, doot, doot.
Whatever.
know, it's just greatness, right? I don't know. It's,
well, I like Ed Annapolis, so that's good. Yeah, good one. Good question.
That is good. So yeah. What's your favorite food there?
Oh, gosh. I all like everything it? On the menu. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we switch it up all the time. Seafood pasta, pizza, lasagna, nice. You name it.
My son always gets cheese pizza, which sounds so plain and boring, but it's so good. It is so good.
That's great.
It is New York style, floppy, folded over, just a slice of cheese pizza. Mm-hmm. Mm.
Now, does he fold it to eat it?
No. Wow. He's growing as a pizza eater.
You'll need to teach him the ways.
Yeah. Yeah. He will not eat it with a fork like some politicians have in the past. I can tell you that.
Okay, I'm getting hungry. Let's move on to a new topic.
You should have ate.
I know. So, Karen, so what inspired you?
Way too late for lunch, man. I know. Just dunch now.
Now you're interrupting my questions here. Karen, what inspired you to become more involved? Because I know Frisco Women's League was kind of like your entrance, but what was it, and what was the first thing you did from a community service type perspective, other than
besides
the
Frisco
Women's League? Yeah, aside from that.
Oh, gosh, I'm trying to think back. It would probably be whenever I joined the board of Frisco Family Services in 2008, I think was the year I joined the board. Mm-hmm. And that was wonderful. I ended up serving for 9 years. I served as president of the board for 2 of those years. We started the capital campaign that has now resulted in the building of the client services center on Main Street next to the resale store. Very I was cool. actually on the board when we actually built the new resale store as well.
Oh, wow,
and if people look at where we were at the very beginning, it's amazing the things that have happened.
Speaking of the retail store, so I've noticed that the past 6 months or so, they've had some new construction going on there. So what do they do? Do you have any idea?
No, I don't actually. The client services center was being built next to it, if that's what you're talking
that's
about.
That's probably what I'm talking about.
Yes, and then there's an event room that's in the middle, and then the resale store is next to it. It's actually, the new client services center is kind of behind the food pantry now.
Gotcha.
Right. But that's what it was, yes.
Very cool.
Yeah, and it's a, you know, it's a wonderful organization. I think that's one of the big blessings I have had, you know, in my time is really just having the opportunity to be part of some really fantastic organizations.
So when you getting involved back then, did you have city council on your vision?
Oh, gosh, no. Nowhere in sight. And honestly, I didn't for many, many, many years. It was when I was in Leadership Frisco. I'm class 19 grad. So that was 5 years ago now.
Yeah.
And my husband even asked me then. And I was on the I was on the Frisco Chamber of Commerce board by then. And he said, what are you doing with all this? And I said, what do you mean, what am I doing with all this? He said, well, I mean, do you want to serve, you know, run for public office? And I said, no, I just want to learn more about my community. I just want to be involved.
I
enjoy it. And, you know, and I kept being asked to do more things. And I even served on the Frisco ISD Long Range Planning Committee around the same time. Mm-hmm. And just for me, it's been just a journey.
Right.
And it was one thing after another. And honestly, that pivotal moment for me.
Yeah, this is my next question. So what was that moment?
That pivotal moment, I applied for Charter Review Commission with the City of Frisco. And I found out one night that I had been appointed to the commission, but I was also honored to find out that I had been appointed as chair of that commission by City Council. And first of all, it's not something I asked for. I was just hoping to make the committee.
Right.
I mean, chairing it wasn't something that I felt was necessary or needed. I was honored that they felt like I had the leadership skills to do that. Mm-hmm. And it was a unanimous decision, my understanding is, of council. And I was thrilled about that. But I got in there and we spent over 6 months reviewing a 38-page document, our city charter, that basically establishes all the ways in which our city governs itself.
Right.
And it is a fascinating document if you're a total governance geek like I am. For many other people, they would look at that, you know, at the document and say, why in the world would you spend 6 months studying this? But there's so many different provisions. And so we would go through each one of those provisions and we would look to see what, you know, possibly needs to be updated just to make sure that it's accurate and correct for where we are today. Where were opportunities for improvement? What were best practices that other cities were doing in our state? We had the city secretary's office represented in that meeting.
Sure.
We had the city attorney's office represented in those meetings. We had other leadership within the city all involved in that and helping feed us information and research and answer questions for us and guide us through
So that was your pivotal moment, right?
It
so
was. Like,
so you knew, so you, so all of a sudden you're chairing this committee with all these important people, you're the one leading the show. And then that was like the hook. That was like,
but it was really more that as I was part of that process, realizing how much I loved it. And honestly, that I felt like I could do a good job
right.
on city council, and that I felt like I could lead in a positive, professional way, and that I could represent people in this community. And I feel like that was more of a calling than a, you know,
a decision, right? It's almost like it was calling you as opposed to you kind of forcing it onto yourself type thing.
Yeah. And it just felt like the right path. And it wasn't a path I was intentionally on. But when I got there and I realized all this experience that I'd built up over the years and all this knowledge I had and all these opportunities I'd had to lead within the city, and I realized all those things had been building blocks. I just wasn't looking for them.
Right.
And, you know, it just, you know, it was a realization that there were a couple of different opportunities where open seats would be available
yeah.
in the coming years. Last year, Tim Nelson termed out. And for my own personal reasons, I just wasn't ready for that. That year,
I think you made a good choice.
Yeah, I think you did too.
It was a crazy year. Yeah, the candidates that ran for a year and seven people for an open seat. And, you know, but my daughter is a freshman in high school this year. I wanted to actually learn high school.
Yeah,
it's been a long time since I've been in high school, so I needed to make sure. Yeah, I felt comfortable with that. I felt comfortable where she was and where my son were in terms of their life. My husband's always been supportive, so whenever I want to do anything, his answer is always, "Of course, yes, I support you," which I love. But you know, next year, Avery gets her driver's license in September of this year.
Oh, wow!
And so, if I'm elected, you know, it was only a few months until Avery is able to drive. And right. for me, that's such a difference maker for our family that we're not having to divide and conquer with two kids and all their activities.
Right.
We can count on her to help us to provide transportation for our son, to go to the grocery store, take herself to practices, you know, things like that. That
yeah,
for me, being
huge.
A, you know, making sure that I can balance my life as a mom and a wife and make sure that I'm still feeling like I'm good
right.
in those other roles as well, in addition to serving the city at this level. And it's a big responsibility. And I don't know that people always recognize or appreciate it's a volunteer position.
Yeah.
It is not a paid full-time position at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so every person on city council has something else that they do in addition to this. And so that's a big responsibility.
And I think that's one of the coolest things about our city council is that it's not paid. So, you know, people are running for the right reason, or at least the reason that they believe, whether or not
right.
you agree with them or not. The people that run almost always feel passionate about being on city council and changing, you know, or helping guide the city moving forward. And I've seen other cities where it's not like that. Like my hometown, just one of the oldest townships in America, switched over to a city a few years ago, and they have buckled the whole thing, and they all have salaries and everything. I mean, they couldn't have done a worse job. And,
really?
And, yeah, oh, it's horrible. It's so bad. But to know, and I kind of talked to them, I was kind of, you know, we've got one of the, you know, we're about six times the size of my hometown, and we have all volunteer, you know, city council. Even the mayor's is a, mm-hmm. I mean, they get small stipends.
Small
but that's right, it.
But
yeah,
it's not,
No, yeah, it's
not paid wages. Like, it's not
exactly.
living wage.
Right. It's very different. And but it's a very, very big volunteer commitment. It is something that you need to be ready for.
Right.
You need to understand what that role looks like. You need to be willing and able to step into that role and do the job that you are expected to do on behalf of these, on behalf of the residents in this community.
It's not part-time either.
No.
I mean, there are so many things going on in this city.
Right.
And there's so many events you'll have to attend and meet, and it's beyond the two meetings a month, but you have prep for the meeting.
And the research behind it. Yeah,
you got to know what planning and zoning is doing. And I mean, there's so much to it.
There is. And you're right. There's a lot of responsibilities with that. You know, in the service that I've done over the years, and the reason why, and just I know that I've got the ability to do this, and I've got the ability to do it well, in part, you know, with all the different volunteer and leadership things that I've done in this community over the last several years, it's a balancing act.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I won't be able to continue those, by the way. I know that I serve on the board right now of Frisco Fast Packs.
Right.
They know that if I'm elected, that I'll need to resign from the board. They're aware of that. you know, I've told him I feel bad that I'd have to resign, and but you know, I hope I have to resign.
Right.
You know, I rolled off the board of the Frisco Chamber of Commerce back in December, and so I don't have that on my, you know, on my calendar anymore. You know, there's other things like that that I just know I'll have to rebalance right. in order to make room for this. But because of all the involvement that I've had over the years, this isn't having to find time to serve at this level. I've got the time. I've mm-hmm. been building in time into my schedule to serve in this community for years.
Right.
That's just part of who I am. It's part of my DNA. I tell people, you know, some people like to jog, or some people, you know, their hobbies like to, you know, do different things. Mine is to serve. That's my hobby. I love doing it.
So that's actually a great segue question that I usually ask the candidates is, what do you do in your free time when you're not,
right.
you know, politicking and running for city council and doing your standard real job? You know, what are some of the things that you like to do other than, you know, Frisco?
Other than Frisco, I am at volleyball tournaments watching my kids. I like to watch their volleyball practices when I can. I just like to soak it in. I'll go to events at their school. You know, any way that I can actually support them. I know that time is limited with that.
Right.
You know, they're not going to be around here forever. And so
it's so fast.
It is. It's scaring me with Avery being a freshman. I know that my time is limited on her already, and I feel it. But it has always been very intentional for me to be very present in their lives.
Yep.
And to make sure that they know that we are always going to be their number one fan, their number one cheerleader, their number one support system. And by the way, that won't change.
That's great. Yeah, of course.
It won't change if I'm elected into public office.
Sure.
That's still going to be the same.
I'm always surprised at how many people don't have time for their kids. Like, I heard a thing one time, and they said, what you should do is spend 30 minutes one-on-one time with your kid every day. So if you have three, that's an hour and a half of your time, right? And I'll never forget how many people are like, oh, I can't do that. I don't have time for that. And I thought, well, what's more important than your kids?
Well, seriously. I'll tell you this, you know,
you're busy. You got to put food on their table.
Absolutely. From a personal standpoint, I've been in human resources for 27 years. I came here to Dallas, got into human resources, and haven't left that, that field in all those years. But 8 years ago, I left corporate America. Mm-hmm. And I left corporate America because I got really, really tired of other people thinking that company took precedence over God, family. I mean, they were third at best.
Yeah, at best.
And so, you know, but I've felt like I kept having to fight for the ability to balance my life. And I really resented it. I resented it a lot. And I know every company is not like that. I know there are amazing companies.
Yeah.
I really, really do. Unfortunately, some of the ones that I was part of just didn't have that balance. And so I left and I, you know, became a small business owner. I opened my own human resources consulting firm. And I've been doing that for the last 8 years. And I love it. And, you know, That's it comes cool. with risk and reward. You know, I mean, the opportunities. I mean, I'm always having to, you know, look for different opportunities. I mean, there's always something going on. But at the end of the day, I also get to balance my life. And I get to decide for myself what that balance looks like. And for me personally and for my family, that just was something that was just too important for me to keep doing the grind of corporate America. It's not, like I said, I don't hate corporate America at all. For a lot [S2] Right. [S1] Of people, it works very well. But for me, I just needed a different environment.
I heard the other day, somebody said, if you died today, your employer would have you replaced within 2 months. But your family would still be grieving. So you need to put your priorities.
So moving.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like, don't live your life for your job. I mean, it's just, you know, anybody.
Right.
That's a totally different conversation,
well,
but it is.
Man.
It's true. It's important.
It's funny, heavy. Even, you know, and from, you know, they talk about millennials, you know, we're demanding work-life balance, you know, and that they're the reason why all these work-life balance initiatives, you know, were needed. Well, the reality is everyone wants work-life balance.
Right.
Maybe the millennials were just loud about it and got us to the point where we actually had to start paying attention to it. But it's not like 50 and 60-year-olds were saying, no, I want to stay here and work $60 an hour and my hourly equivalent rate go down to nothing,
right.
you know, mm-hmm. 70 hour, you know, whatever. I mean, everyone wants work-life balance. So that wasn't just a millennial thing.
I would think the millennials and the, what is it, the Z generation that's following them would probably be more prevalent in that those efforts of work-life balance. Because, you know, I'm an X-gen, right? So, and the boomers before me, we kind of sucked it up and did the corporate, you know, chaos. And a lot of our families, you know, resulted from, you know, not seeing our parents all the time. But a lot of it's because the opportunities weren't there, which they are now.
I've never done corporate anything.
Ooh. I got out quick.
I tell you,
I mean, I had some great experiences over the years. I had lots of great experiences. I also had some really tough learning lessons that, you know, and I had to decide for myself how to strike balances and you know, where to create lines and boundaries, honestly, for myself. Because, and in the world of technology, that's becoming more and more difficult because, you know, your phone with your email, you know, is you know, right next to you or in your hand most of the time, which means that boundaries from a work environment have changed.
Right.
Now, I will tell you from a consulting standpoint, I've got business owners who will call me and text me, and honestly, even more texting nowadays, which is kind of funny. But I've got business owners who will text me, you know, in the evening sometimes if it's critical.
Right.
And I don't mind that because I know if they're doing it, that there's a need. But, you know, I also know that if I need to go to a PTA meeting during the day, that they're not going to give me a hard time for not being sitting at my desk waiting for their phone call.
Right.
If I'm not available for 1 hour.
Right.
Right.
Well,
I had that conversation with my kid the other day. He's like, "Dad, you're always having to work." I said, "Always having to work." I said, when I have to work, I have to work. That's true. But I'm also the guy that's picking you up during the summer and taking you to go to the FAC and go down the water slide about 20 times at 10 a.m., you know, whenever it opens.
They just recognize when you're not there.
Yeah. You know? Well, you know, people like to focus on the negative. And
I always think about with our kids' perspective is it's not what they know or they realize now. It's what they'll know and realize later.
Right.
And what they'll be able to look back on and see, you know, what our presence was like in their lives.
Right.
And they'll also at that point actually have more comparison. They'll know what other families looked like. Mm-hmm. We only know, you know, when you're growing up, and that was the same way, you really only know what your family looks like. And you think all families look and act like your family.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's just the way, right. You know, the dynamics of your family environment tend to be what you assume is going on in every family. And when you get older, you start figuring out that there's differences to that. You start being able to measure, you know, what you like or don't like about your own upbringing or the upbringing of others. And that also helps kind of guide, you know, how you raise your own kids too. My right. mom was a school teacher. She's retired now, but she was a teacher and she was very present for me. And particularly in high school, whenever I was in Future Business Leaders of America, because she was one of the advisors. And we really bonded. And at a time when teenagers are supposed to hate their parents, I actually spent more time, particularly with my mom, because she was my chaperone at a lot of different events around the state and at the national level. And, you know, it was great. And, you know, my dad was a hardworking mechanic. You know, he worked very, very hard and put his body through a lot. And, you know, but again, even as a child, you understood what that sacrifice looked like whenever you could see someone that was working that hard and was, you know, really putting their body to test every day.
Good timing on that.
I was hoping you would do that.
I think we all picked it up.
That's right.
In fact, I think you blew off my mic there.
Holding this cough in for like 20 minutes, man. That's terrible. No, that's cool. I like that. That's fun. This is good. Do you have any more questions, Ed? I'm trying to think of a question, but I've been listening to you.
I do.
I've been trying to be present in the moment and not thinking of the next question.
You know, I'm always trying to do the one-off stuff, right? So I've got one.
One-off stuff.
Your favorite 1980s movie.
Ooh, 80s movie. Why do we got to go to a decade? Why can't we just have our favorite movie?
Because I can appreciate her selection.
Okay. Well, why? You don't watch current movies?
No.
John Hughes was masterful.
Oh, yeah.
There isn't a movie he made that I don't like, but Pretty in Pink.
Pretty in Pink.
Molly Ringwald, and really all her movies were fantastic, but Pretty in Pink would be my favorite. And some of the music. It was
timeless. Seriously, timeless.
I can watch.
She and Jake eat the birthday cake on the table at the end. I mean, come on, what teenager didn't want to be the other one on the other side of that table eating cake with Jake? I mean, come on.
He was a pretty handsome guy. And he had a Porsche. What kind of guy has a Porsche at that age?
Oh, no,
wasn't he like 20? Like a Porsche in the 80s? Come on. It's like having a house.
I could watch Breakfast Club
all the time. I actually
every day.
My daughter and I watched it together when she was 12.
Yeah, my son.
I kind of stretched it out because it was like, it's PG. What do you care? Like all of a sudden you got like that. Some parts of that movie did not age well. I'll tell you.
There's a couple scenes.
That's the part. It's like some of it. Well, some of it did not age. No, that's not even. That probably part aged better than any of it.
Well, okay. There was the one the under the desk.
Thing. Yeah, that was inappropriate. Yeah. That didn't age well. But overall, I agree. I think that movie is killer, and I think that's my favorite.
I love that movie.
Yeah, and Saying Anything, John Cusack.
Holding the huge.
Yeah.
Better Off Dead.
Better Off Dead.
Favorite. I want my $2. You know, you still can't buy that movie.
I know. I think you can watch it because I did watch it not too long ago.
You can watch it on YouTube.
Yeah, it's YouTube.
The company that owns the rights to it, you could never rent it. You couldn't buy it on VHS. There was a limited run.
Are they embarrassed of it? Do they not want to release
it? There's some weird company that owns the right to it. I read about it years ago, and I don't remember all the details. But they own the rights to it, and they've never released it. So it's not on any streaming service. Not but you can go to YouTube right now and
hit play.
Hit play.
Huh. And it's free.
Interesting.
Commercial free. It's just a YouTube video. Yep. It's the weirdest thing.
Interesting.
John Cusack doesn't like that movie.
Really?
He did?
I did read about that. No, he didn't like it at all.
Better off dead.
Since he's been a little bit older, he thought it was going to be more serious. Because, you know, there's like, he was suicidal in the movie. That's the whole point of the movie.
Right.
He thought it was going to be a serious movie. He didn't realize it was going to be this comedy of him failing to kill himself over
so,
and over.
So wait a minute. So lining up your crap box car next to a couple of Asian guys with their crap box car who are impersonating.
I don't know how
who was the impersonating? It was Howard Cosell. Howard Cosell. There's not comedy involved in that.
Wayne Myers as but
I don't know. Good
effort. Wayne Myers.
But that's pretty funny. I love that movie. I do too.
I think now that he's older, he doesn't hate it as much. But yeah, he didn't like it.
Okay, so that's 80s movies.
We got to that. What kind of music do you like? And we won't limit you to a decade. My questions will be decadeless.
No, music, I mean, gosh, I like all kinds of music. Growing up in the country, I definitely like country music. I mean, I'm half redneck.
I begged you for a country listener.
I'm almost full redneck. I mean, North Louisiana is very different than South Louisiana. South Louisiana is Cajun.
Right.
North Louisiana is country.
Right.
We're much more like East Texas is how I like to describe us. But so I listened to a lot of country music growing up. I had my Wranglers, I was very country at times. But I love, all kinds of music. I'm still kind of a sucker for top 40 even.
Oh, really?
I never listened to country until I came to Texas. Like, I actually despised country music till I came to Texas.
Really? Country music?
Absolutely. Western Massachusetts is very, believe it or not, people think Massachusetts is like, they think Boston suburbs, Cambridge, all that stuff,
that's
right?
Country, man.
But you go out like past Framingham, past even like Worcester, Worcester's kind of right in the middle. Country, bumpkin, all over. In fact, I literally ran into a guy in Northern Massachusetts who said, "You can't get there from here." Like, seriously, like, "Hey, where can we get some liquor?" And he's like, "You can't get there from here." And I was like, "I've never heard that before in my life." And like, and that's country. That's, you ever heard that before? You're looking at me like I'm on some weirdo.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You never heard, like, you never heard like some driving through the country and someone say, "You can't get there from here." You never heard that before?
Never heard that in my
life. Okay, me either.
Wow. It's a northern thing. Cause it's like one of those things like
it's not northern. Like, I grew up in two states.
Maybe it is a northern thing. Cause
not Iowa.
It was a joke that we grew up with, you know, really? Like you'd run into some small town and ask for directions and they would say, "You can't get there from here." And of course you can always get there
where
from
would
somewhere.
You
we were right on the border of New Hampshire and Massachusetts.
Where would you be that you can't get there from here?
Exactly, that's the joke.
Is that
but
the
it,
post?
Like literally but when oh, I when a guy the... literally said it
oh
it blew
I
our mind because we it was a Sunday afternoon, we were looking for booze.
Yeah,
I think we were actually in New Hampshire.
Oh, okay.
Anyway,
funny. Oh, I bought a bottle of Crown Royal.
Yeah, we were in New Hampshire.
Now they have the state liquor stores. I bought a bottle of Crown Royal in New Hampshire. What?
It's state liquor store. Yeah, mm-hmm. They don't have regular. They have Packies. Packies is a Massachusetts thing. But Packies are another name for package store.
Yeah.
So a package store is where you go to get alcohol.
And they don't
in
have
the state
a lot
of Massachusetts,
tax.
Right. You can't get alcohol in grocery stores or anything like that. You have to go to a packy. And there you get and they're little tiny, most of them are tiny little stores.
One I went to was huge.
Now they do have mega ones now. It's I think they finally got up at the time. But it's very pilgrimage or Puritan type philosophy.
Yeah, it was a whole lot of people with a whole lot of full carts. It seemed like they had drove quite
I'll
some
tell
time.
You, the yeah, Massachusetts people drank lot and hard stuff too.
Well, I suppose if you got to go to another state to get cheap liquor,
that's where you do you because there's no state, there's no sales tax in New Hampshire, so everyone they go over to the border.
Why?
Because it's like a 5.5 or I don't know what the state tax is now, but you have to pay a sales tax for alcohol. So when you drive, they'll drive an hour and a half to over the border from New Hampshire, so they don't have to pay 5% in sales tax.
Well, and because the state owns all the liquor stores, they're making the profit.
Right.
So they don't need to tax it.
Gotcha.
So that's why it's cheaper. Pennsylvania does the same thing. Yeah. They have state-run liquor stores.
Same thing with the cigarettes. And like people in Massachusetts still smoke a lot. Like I go home every once in a while. I'm like, damn, that dude's still smoking on a... It's weird, man. It's weird. Down here, you think, it's funny
not
because
around here, if you go to like Dallas and stuff, you see a lot of smokers.
Yeah, Addison. Addison.
Go to the bowling alley in the Colony.
Oh yeah,
you'll
Mike's
see
place.
Right? You'll see quite a few smokers.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, not in the lane. I'll tell you. Back to the country music thing. Western Massachusetts, lots of country. Like, the philosophy is very country. A lot of them wear cowboy boots. They do the line dancing back then, and I don't know if that's still a thing. But me personally couldn't stand country. But when I came to Texas, man, I flipped like a heartbeat. I love.
You just loved it. He just adapted.
I love country music. I love cowboy boots.
I was going to say, how long did it take you to buy a pair of cowboy boots?
Okay, so I think I've told this story.
We heard this story. He did, but go ahead.
Do you want me to tell it? All right, I'll tell you.
Make it short, though, not a long one.
All right, so when I first came to Texas, still had the accent, Red Sox hat, going to my first cowboy boot store. I don't know what it was called. It was off of Loop 12, I think. I walked away with a pair of red, cherry red, like dark red, like a real cherry, with boots with pointy tips. Gold inlays and gold tips.
Oh my God.
Yeah. They were, I absolutely loved them. They were gorgeous.
Pretty.
But they saw me coming a mile away.
I can't get enough of this story.
I love that story. And then I took it right to Country 2000 and scored big time. And then, you know, once I started meeting people and they're like, what the heck are you wearing, dude? Like, they wouldn't go out with me. I'm like, what are you talking about? I got cowboy boots.
That's hilarious.
Anyway, that's a funny story.
So you moved to Frisco 17 years ago. So you knew what traffic was like 17 years ago. This drives me nuts because every single year we got all these people, we've got to do something about traffic. We've got to do something about it. And I get it. There's things that we need to do about traffic. But come on, man. It used to take, when I moved here in 2006, it took me 20 minutes to get out of this town. There was no tollway. There was no roads. Everything was two lanes. I remember when Legacy got completed to Maine.
Right. So when we moved here, there was a service road on each side for the tollway. One lane each way. One. El Dorado was a two-lane road.
It was a two-lane. That's why I didn't
Main
move.
Main Street was still a two-lane road and was quickly expanding.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember someone in our neighborhood complaining about the fact that El Dorado was going to be six lanes and that we didn't need that many lanes.
That
the
is
creek
too funny.
Didn't even exist. I mean, nothing north of there. I mean, yeah, there, it was very, very different. To your point, I lived in Greyhawk and I actually early on got a job that was in Frisco Square. And it took me over 30 minutes to go, what's about 5 miles, 6 miles. It was painful.
We were looking for houses, and we looked at a couple houses on the trails, and I said, well, we're going to go up to Greyhawk. So we went up Teal, and remember, Teal was...
It was a dirt road past El Dorado.
It became... before you got to El Dorado, it narrowed down into two lanes. We sat through the light three cycles before we could turn left on El Dorado. I said, there's no way. I'm not living this far north.
Yeah.
I can't do it. So we ended up buying in the trails. Because I can't. It's insane.
You know, and I will say this, you know, the traffic, one of the things that I think is amazing, even then, I learned the value of our traffic engineers in Frisco.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they will go out and do a light study. They will go study an intersection. And they will go find out what the traffic patterns are at different times of the day so they can time the lights differently. And they were masterful back in those days and even more, you know, today as well. But back then, they'd be very creative about how they did some of these light timings so that they could get the traffic to flow. And it was challenging. 423 was still a two-lane road, and so Little Elm, mm-hmm. all the Little Elm traffic would come across El Dorado over to the tollway to come down. And that's still what we have as a traffic problem right now, and I'd say this all the time. We're a cut-through city. You know, for Little Elm, 423 still isn't as viable of an option as coming across the tollway.
Tollway, El Dorado.
So they're going to come all the way across the tollway. They're on Panther Creek or on El Dorado or maybe even Stonebrook. I mean, they're coming across. But then you've got all the 121 corridor the 380 corridor communities. You've got Prosper. You've got Salina. There's no jobs up in that area. So everyone's coming through Frisco to go to jobs. And so if we can create more job opportunities here in Frisco, we actually can help solve some of those traffic issues too.
I like that idea.
And 380 and the tollway are a perfect area for an employment center. That's a great area where we can put some more corporations, put businesses up in that area and encourage some different flow of traffic in a different direction so that people aren't passing through Frisco as much as they do today.
I agree.
I like that.
I agree.
Okay, so we're going to have to wrap this up because we're about to lose our battery again.
Okay.
So, we're blowing through this today. So,
all right. Seem like it's been that long.
I know. Well, we're about 40, 50 minutes. So, Karen, we're going to give you one opportunity to just kind of give a final say hello, goodbye to everybody, and then we'll kind of do the shout out right after that. So we'll give you about a minute or so.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to be here and participate. I listen to your podcast all the time, so getting to actually be on the podcast is cool. Very cool.
We like that.
I love doing something where I'm not actually on a candidate forum, where I'm on the hot seat. This is actually a lot more enjoyable than
if
that.
If they were only all like this,
I've enjoyed the opportunity to do those as well, but this just has a more relaxed environment. And right about now, I very much appreciate having just a little different flow.
We timed it perfectly that way.
Three more weeks.
Yeah.
Three more weeks.
All right. Well, listen, thank you, Karen, for coming on to our show. And for all our listeners, be sure to subscribe and share with all your friends and let them know about what a great interview we have had with Karen Cunningham today. So thank you for listening, and we will catch you next time.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Deep in the Heart of Frisco podcast. Make sure you subscribe. Listen next week for another informative episode.